I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date.
We can't tolerate this anymore. These tragedies must end. And to end them, we must change.
With those words at last night's memorial service in Connecticut, President Barack Obama reopened the door on a topic that for decades has been closed: gun control. Adam Lanza used a Bushmaster 223 caliber assault rifle to kill 6 adults and 20 first graders. He also had 2 handguns with him. All 3 belonged legally to his mother. This hour, we'll look at the hot button issue from both sides, for and against, and take a look at how this latest tragedy has shaped the debate. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Gun control suddenly is all the rage in the country today in the wake of Friday's massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. That's the day Adam Lanza used a Bushmaster 223 assault rifle to kill 26 people, including 20 first graders. Today, a conversation about where this country goes from here when it comes to tough gun laws and a look at the thinking of a major gun rights advocate in Kansas. We'll welcome your calls this morning. What should be this country's response in the wake of this horrific event? And what do you make of former Education Secretary Bill Bennett's suggestion on Meet the Press yesterday that at least one adult should carry a gun in every school? You can call us 816-235-2888 or drop us an email to updatedate@kcur.org, where you can join the ongoing conversation on KCUR's Facebook page. Joining me this morning is Sedgwick County Judge Phil Journey. Phil Journey is a former state senator from the Wichita area. He's an outspoken gun rights advocate and a former National Rifle Association board member. Judge, so good to have you here this morning.
Steve, I appreciate the opportunity. Oh, my pleasure. This is the only way I'd do this.
And also with us this morning from St. Louis is Joan Bray. She's a former state senator from St. Louis who has worked to pass gun control measures in Jefferson City. Joan, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve. It's nice to be here.
Let's get right into this, Judge. You know, lots of talk today that the federal assault weapons ban should be renewed. California Senator Dianne Feinstein talking very much about doing just that. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, when you look at the people that advocate gun control, frankly, it's always, you know, a tragedy is a terrible thing to waste. And so they move forward with their agenda. The reality is the assault weapons ban was not a gun ban at all. It was a ban on bayonet lugs.
What do you mean by that? I thought it was a gun ban.
Well, when you looked at the way the federal law was written back during the Clinton administration, it prohibited certain characteristics of firearms to be included in them. It prohibited a bayonet lug. It prohibited a flash hider. It prohibited – you couldn't have two or more of these design features – on the firearm. But they kept selling AKs. They kept selling AR-15s. The reality is that these firearms function the same as firearms designed more than 100 years ago. They're semi-automatic. They shoot one cartridge with each pull of the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
This is a feel-good thing when it doesn't really address the issue that needs to be addressed in these tragic situation,
which is
that, and I'm sure this good senator from St. Louis will verify that Missouri, just like Kansas, has gutted the mental health budgets in the state, that the support out there is tragically almost non-existent. I know judges here in Sedgwick County, they have a hard time with care and treatment cases, which is where the court finds that the person is a danger to themselves or others, and they have to decide whether that person is bad enough that they can use one of the very limited bed space slots that they have available. We just don't have a place to put them.
Let me bring Senator Joan Bray into this conversation. Senator, what do you make of this talk about renewing the federal assault weapons ban? You just heard Phil Journey say it's a waste of time. What do you make of it? Where should Missouri be headed here, in your view?
Well, I certainly believe that the assault weapon ban should be renewed. I don't know the exact language of the proposal, but I think it should be up to date. It should cover what most people rationally believe shouldn't be in the hands of just the average person. I can't think of any reason that the average person who has a gun needs to be able to, shoot, just repeated bullets, and with the kinds of what this young man in Connecticut was able to do, that kind of gun. That's not for sport or for hunting or for a rational use of guns that most people support. I believe the majority of people in this country would like to have gun safety addressed for everyone, so these kinds of situations can't happen. Missouri is a very difficult climate to work in. It's true that mental health budgets have been decimated in the recession in particular, and they weren't very good before that. But that's not the answer completely. Gun safety and people being able to be comfortable that guns aren't right. going to be so accessible that they can be whipped out and used for assaults on innocent lives. I believe the country wants some rational approach to this.
Judge Phil Jerney, what about what Joan Bray just said? I mean, Adam Lanza used this Bushmaster 223 assault rifle. It's been called a weapon of war. Has the country reached a point where those kinds of weapons need to go away and go away for good?
A real assault weapon is fully automatic. And they are legal in the United States.
Meaning you pull
States.
A trigger and it keeps firing.
It just keeps firing until the magazine's empty if you want it to. And the reality is, of course, that while I was the author of Right to Carry in Kansas and preemption and range protection, all those other things, one of the bills I'm the proudest of is one that closed the information loop in Kansas for individuals who were declared by a court to be a danger to themselves or others. And I made sure that information was transmitted to the FBI so that they could never purchase a firearm again. And states do not fund their data transmission services to the FBI when it comes to felony convictions or to these kinds of cases.
Yeah, but get back to the question on the table here, what Joan Bray's talking about. Weapons like this that some describe, again, as a weapon of war, is it time for them to go
there
away,
is,
Phil?
There is no provision that is going to take these firearms out of the hands of citizens.
I mean, you can't write
what
one?
The ban would be, the bill that's proposed by Senator Feinstein is prospective only. And
that's
so
right.
It just says
she said
you
that
can't
yesterday.
Sell anymore. So there are 5 million, 10 million, 50 million of these firearms out in circulation now. The genie's out of the bottle.
So you're saying it wouldn't make any –
it's not
going to
make any difference at all.
It's like trying to ban bubble gum. You ban it today, it's going to be around 10 years from now.
Gun control worked really well in Norway. It didn't stop this guy's name I can't pronounce
right.
from, killing 77 people and shooting 242 others.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot rarer in Norway than it is in the United States.
If you just look at Wikipedia,
monthly,
Senator,
weekly.
If you just look at Wikipedia, there and you look at Europe compared to the United States or compared to Asia, there are more mass murders in Asia during this period that's reviewed in Wikipedia than in the United States. Now,
well,
they
I
have
don't know
strong
what Wikipedia
gun...
you're talking about, but I know that I heard a statistic the other day about the mass murders over a period of time where the bulk of the majority of them were, occurred in the United States.
Well, we
have very lax gun laws, and we do not, and I don't believe people really want these kinds of guns that can, repeatedly fire and shoot children like happened last week. It's just that defies sensibilities
right.
and, people don't want that. They don't want to feel threatened every time they go into a public space.
Joan, Phil Jerney is right on at least one point here, which is that Senator Feinstein yesterday on Meet the Press did say her legislation would be prospective, meaning going forward from this point, as opposed to banning all the weapons that are already out there. I guess that does raise the question of, can a federal law, for that matter, really make us feel safe in the way that you'd like us all to feel safe, Joan?
Well, I think a prospective law is better than no law. Absolutely. I'm happy to have a prospective law, and then I would like us to know where all those assault weapons are. I think, you know, you can track a car down to the person who has it, and cars are dangerous objects. But I'd like us to get a prospective law for the future and then know where all those guns are. Because,
and that means,
you know, you
that
cannot
means registration
predict who's gonna go off.
Of owners with criminal penalties if they fail to register.
That's right.
I mean, that's really what the good senator's saying.
Well, what's wrong with that, Phil?
I think that once you know where they all are, well, it's not too tough to go pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that the Fifth Amendment to the Bill of Rights says people can't be denied their property without just compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And if
but
you're going to ban these firearms and make them turn them in, you got to pay for them.
Go ahead, Joan.
No one is talking confiscation. I'm talking about knowing where they are.
And what would that get you, Joan? If you knew that, how would that help you?
Well, it certainly would. You know, perhaps they wouldn't have to go through all the tracking issues that they're having to on this. But the point is that, you know, we need to feel safe in our public spaces, and we need to know that guns are used appropriately and stored appropriately and not accessible, you know, to people who do not know how to use them or who would use them unwisely. And mental health services and attention are great, but you just do not know who's going to go off and do something horrible like the young man in Connecticut did. So access to guns is the issue. Is that if access is easy, then it's going to be easier to massacre people.
Joan, we only have you for a few more minutes. I want to grab you while I have you here. You know, one of the concerns that Phil Journey raised a few minutes ago was the whole idea of mental health and mental health programs across the country. We all know those programs have been devastated in the wake of the recession, in the wake of budget cutbacks, particularly in states like Missouri and Kansas. How big of a concern is that in your mind, and what needs to be done on that front?
Well, it's long been a concern in this state, Steve. Back in even in the good years of the 90s, when we were, you know, in here in Missouri, we were having to turn back money because of the Hancock Amendment. The mental health budget still suffered then. It doesn't have the respect and the attention it should have. Absolutely, we have got to restore some of those basic services and make them accessible to everybody. We have huge, you know, developmental disabilities, mental disabilities across the board that we need mental health funding for. But as far as being, you know, a good mental health budget, solving the problem of access to assault weapons and to, you know, other weapons of war, that's not going to solve it, just having a robust mental health budget. You have to have rational laws about guns. I could say we have more rational laws about tracking and knowing about automobiles than we do guns.
Sedgwick County Judge Phil Journey, what is legal to do in Kansas? Can anyone walk into a store and buy the kind of weapon that Adam Lanza used on Friday at this Bushmaster 223? It's a very popular rifle in this country. Can I walk into a store this afternoon and buy one of those things?
Well, you might pass the background check, but I don't know that everyone would. The reality is that the federal law governs, and state laws are kind of like another layer on top of it. And that's why it's important for state legislators to close these information loops so that court findings on state level are transmitted to the FBI. But the federal law has been in place since the 68 Gun Control Act. If you're a convicted felon, if you're under a domestic violence restraining order, like a protection from abuse act case, or if you're an illegal alien, or if you've been found to be a danger to yourselves or others, or been dishonorably discharged from the military. The list goes on and on and on. All you have to do is, like, grab one of those forms and take a look at it and see all the questions. And the federal government does a decent job, although there are some problems with funding and things on a federal level, too, but in doing those background checks. And so, in fact, it was reported this morning that the shooter in Connecticut was denied a purchase a week before the shooting.
But he still had access.
Well, he murdered his mother and stole her firearms.
Right.
True.
Exactly. And, you know, there's huge loopholes in the background checks. 40% of guns are sold with no background check. And that's got to be closed. Every gun sold should have a background check.
If you're just joining us this morning or listening to Up to Date, we're talking about gun control in this country in the wake of Friday's massacre in Connecticut. Again, our phone number, 816-235-2888. As you might guess, our lines are jammed. Option two is to send us an email, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Jane from Prairie Village has a comment right along the lines of what Senator Joan Bray is talking about. Jane, good morning.
Good morning. I'm just really outraged by this, and I need help understanding why any private citizen would need or want an assault rifle or an automatic rifle. What is in the minds of the people that want one, and what's in the mind of the government that would allow it?
Why does anybody need a Corvette or a Porsche? You know, you can drive your little Prius back and forth to work and get the job of transportation done. But
a car is one thing, Phil. A gun that kills people is something else. Help Jane out.
Well, we keep using this car analogy on registration. So, you know, they're fun.
It doesn't help me.
They're fun. Go down to the range and try one. They're fun to shoot. They're very small cartridges. Compared to like a deer rifle or a hunting rifle, assault weapon is a pejorative term. These are not assault rifles. Assault rifles are fully automatic. And these firearms just look bad, but they're basically the same gun as that pretty wood thing someone goes and hunts deer with.
Jane?
I get it.
Yeah.
Sort of. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Let's go to Mike from Baldwin City. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Thank you. I am a 35, 40-year gun owner, and I'm a Democrat. I've already talked to two representatives this morning and had arguments with them. Would you guys have a problem with civilians being able to have nothing more than a 10-round clip and allowing law enforcement to have as big a clip as they need? Because to me, it's the capacity issue.
Well, I mean, the reality is, of course, that there are hundreds of millions of magazines already out there in the populace. So, you know, it's just perspective again. You know, I mean, it's
again,
like
to borrow Joan Bray's argument, but why not go that way, Phil? But Joan Bray is saying, why not make it perspective going forward? It would at least be a step in the right direction.
I don't know that it's a step in the right direction. I mean, you know, if you see danger in every corner, you don't only issue building permits for roundhouses. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to address the real issue, which is the state of mental health services, the lack of resources in the courts, the ability to find people and locate them and deal with them appropriately that are a danger themselves or others. You look at all these mass shootings, and 80% of them are crazy. You know, they're either, you know, they say this gentleman had Asperger's syndrome that was the shooter in this one. Others have been paranoid schizophrenics like the one in Colorado. You know, they're on all these psychotropics that eliminate their inhibitions. And, you know, there are consequences for these kinds of choices. And, you know, the point is that politicians don't want to make a choice that costs money because that makes them make a hard choice of raising taxes.
Senator Joan Bray, I'm on borrowed time with you now. Why don't you give us a last comment and just know how much I appreciate you taking time with us today.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really do believe that rational people in this country, who I think there's a majority of rational people, understand that guns, you know, gun ownership is fine. But when you have gun ownership that allows someone to assault classrooms of children and kill them and all the other horrible things that have happened in just recent months of mass murders, people want some sort of safety issues under control. And I think that there are good people in Congress who want to get this done. And I, again, you know, perspective is better than nothing, but we can make people safer, a lot safer, without, you know, taking away anybody's rights.
Joan Bray, thanks so much for your time today. Always a pleasure
to
have you, Joan.
Okay.
Yeah, all the
right.
best. Interesting emails here this morning. One listener proposed this. If you lose control of your gun and someone commits a crime with that gun, you should be held partially responsible. Tim emails us this. Australia banned semi-automatic and pump-style rifles after a mass shooting that resulted in 35 deaths. A study looked at the following decade from 1996 to 2006 and saw no mass shootings in Australia during that time. Also, some interesting Facebook comments this morning on KCUR's Facebook page. Kathleen writes, we need a change in how guns can be acquired legally. You need a license to drive a car. There should be a competency test to use a gun, including having to pass a mental health exam. What about that idea, Phil?
Well, I think that when you look at when you talk about a fundamental right that's enshrined in the Bill of Rights, that to have the government's permission to exercise that right basically eliminates it being a right.
But you're not talking about eliminating it, though. You're talking about passing a test in order to get something, like you pass a test to drive a car.
I think that it's the reality is that everyone has a right to self-defense. I mean, that's been enshrined in common law. That's in state law.
And Kathleen's
also
not denying that right. She's just saying in order to get a gun to defend yourself, you got to pass a mental competency test.
And if you're the victim of domestic violence and that person is stalking you today, you don't want to wait 90 days to get your scheduled psych exam. I mean, you know, who's going to set that standard for that? I mean, the devil's always in the details when it comes to these proposals.
Well said. Kimberly writes us this. States and the federal government have continued to cut services and funding for the mentally ill. If the shooter had received help years ago, would this have happened? And Jerry writes us this. Try to understand what caused this person to commit these atrocities, and you'll likely uncover an undiagnosed mental health problem and absence of observation by the shooter's family and friends. We've been talking about that a little bit here this morning. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Adam Winkler. He's a professor of constitutional law at UCLA. He's the author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Adam, good morning. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having me on.
Professor Winkler, speaking broadly here, what do we know about the effectiveness of gun control measures such as the short-lived federal assault weapons ban this country had in place a few years ago?
Well, the federal assault weapons ban didn't have a major impact on gun crime, in part because ordinary gun criminals generally don't use assault weapons. They are more apparently more favorably used by mass shooters than they are the ordinary criminal. And the law was not particularly well drafted, the 1994 law, and gun makers were able to make and distribute and sell virtually the exact same guns, just they took off a few cosmetic features that characterize them as assault weapons under the federal law. But we know that gun control can work, especially at the margins. We know that well over 1.5 million people have been prevented from buying a gun in a gun store because of the federal background check law. We know that going back into the 1930s, when we passed laws very strictly regulated who could get their hands on machine guns, we saw machine gun crime dwindle to almost nothing, whereas machine gun crime was very commonplace in the 1920s among prohibition-era gangsters like the Al Capones and the John Dillingers of the world. So gun control can work. I don't know if it can work to stop these mass shootings, but there's 80 people a day who die from gunshot wounds. If we can lower that number, even by one or two people a day, we'll be saving every month as many people as lost their lives in the Shady Hook Elementary School.
You know, Professor, we've been talking here about the whole idea of effectiveness of various gun control measures, and Phil Journey, who's a former NRA board member who's here in the studio with me, points out that if you institute a federal assault weapons ban, what about all the guns and magazines that are still in circulation in the country, millions of guns? What about that idea? Can you craft a law that it really has much impact or not?
Very difficult in light of the fact that there are so many guns. And this is an endemic problem for gun control. There are 300 million guns in civilian hands in America, approximately. It's almost one per person.
Wow.
And more than one per adult. And any gun control law that you adopt in the wake of this widespread distribution of firearms is always going to be difficult in achieving its goals. But nonetheless, I think that you have to think forward about 10, 20 years from now. What can we do today that's going to limit the number of people who die from guns tomorrow and the next day? And I think there are things we can do with regards to that, such as closing the background check loophole, increasing and improving our mental health data reporting system for guns. And maybe we need to stop the sale of these high-capacity magazines. There'll still be millions of them out there, but people will want to hold on to them, especially law-abiding gun owners who will not want to sell them because they know they won't be able to find them again.
And one more question, Professor, before we go to a break here, and I'm sure some of our listeners are wondering this. Can you pass a law that makes it illegal to have an assault weapon or something like that in this country today? Even if you already own it, can you ban them going forward, even if people have possessed one for 5 or 10 years, and simply take them out of their hands?
Indeed, you can. I don't think there's anything in the Constitution to stop that. The Second Amendment to the Constitution does protect the right of individuals to have guns. The Supreme Court has said as much, and I argue the same in my book, Gunfight. However, what I also show in Gunfight is that we've also always had gun control laws. The Founding Fathers had gun control laws. The Wild West had some of the most restrictive gun control laws in the nation. That the right to bear arms is not fundamentally inconsistent with reasonable and effective gun safety laws.
Do you have any reason to object to that, Phil Journey?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the professor's saying would be appropriate, but I'm sure the professor would recognize that if you take these firearms away from private citizens, somebody's got to pay them for them, just like they have to pay for your house when they make a new highway over your property.
Is that right, Professor?
It's not quite the case. It is true that the government, when it takes property for public use, it has to compensate people. But the courts have consistently held that when government adopts broad, generally applicable regulations banning certain items that had previously been legal, government does not need to compensate people for those items. So, for instance, when the Prohibition Amendment was adopted to the Constitution, the 18th Amendment outlawing alcohol, the government was not obligated to pay winemakers for going out of business or pay people to turn in their bottles of whiskey. Broad regulations that are designed for broader regulatory purposes rather than taking of property do not have to be compensated.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Brent from Kansas City, Missouri. Brent, welcome to Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. My original comment, I need to add something to it, but I think it would probably help. There's enough guns out there that no laws are going to really change the ability of someone who wants to do something like this to do it. And I think schools need to be, regardless of shootings or not, I think schools need to be locked all the time. There needs to be, security guard or something that checks every person that comes into that school. Not all the students when they're coming in, but after school starts, everyone's in the building. One way in, it's locked, and there's someone there to check who comes in. Regardless of firearms or not, I mean, you need to have some, a parent that may want to kidnap one of their spouse's children that they don't have custody over or anything. I don't understand why that's not done.
Well, Brent, just so you know, I mean, Sandy Hook, obviously, the doors were locked, apparently, when this incident began.
And how did he get in?
He broke the glass and opened the door from the outside.
Okay, well, so that wouldn't help, but, maybe security guard.
Well, that's the Israeli method, I don't think the American people are ready for that.
Well, ready or not, we're not ready to have children shot to death in school.
Of course.
And obviously the whole idea of the expense of hiring a security guard for every school would be a prohibitive cost. Brian writes us this, why can guns not be considered specialty items and treated as such? For instance, drag racing cars are specialty cars and are only driven on specific tracks and are not allowed on highways. If assault rifles are specialty weapons, make them be used only in authorized shooting ranges where they can be purchased. When they are purchased, stored, used, and owners are trained. Also, ammunition is only bought at these ranges. What about that, Professor Winkler?
Well, the Supreme Court has said that you have a constitutional right to have a functional firearm in your home for self-defense. That means you have to be able to have ammunition in your home, and it means you need to be able to have a gun inside your home. I do think that when it comes to something like the so-called assault weapons ban, I think we could impose a much stricter regulation on those weapons. The Supreme Court said that handguns were constitutionally protected because they were in common use for self-defense. AR-15s are not commonly used for self-defense. If you're defending your home, you generally don't want to have a rifle like that that's going to shoot through the nearest wall and maybe hurt your neighbors in the apartment next door. People use handguns, shotguns for self-defense, but an AR-15, while it can be used for self-defense, is not commonly used for self-defense, and thus I don't think it poses a problem with regards to the Second Amendment to impose stricter regulations on such weapons.
Let's grab one more phone call before a break here. Mark from Kansas City, Missouri. Mark, you're on the program. Good morning.
Hi. I'd like to see make two suggestions. First of all, I want to change the language and change the debate because for too long, the gun lobby has controlled not only the debate, but the language used. Your guest, for instance, just a few minutes ago mentioned about said that the right to bear arms was enshrined as if it was something almost wholly. And secondly, I'd like to stop using the term right to bear arms and call it what it really is, the right to bear deadly force. Now, that makes it unique and different from every other right outlined in the Constitution because it is a deadly right, at least potentially deadly. And then as far as proposed legislation, I'd like to make it illegal to have a loaded weapon in your possession unless you have a permit to carry. And secondly, at least a loaded weapon outside your home. And secondly, I think we should address the issues of mental health by putting taxes on the weapons and ammunition and using that to fund mental health initiatives. Hmm. Thanks. I'll take my answer off the air.
Good thoughts, Mark. Interesting thoughts. Phil Journey, what about this idea of a tax on guns to help finance mental health services across the country? Make sense?
No. The reality is, of course, that those services are provided to our population as a whole simply because this rare incident, and this is a rare incident, of someone who was mentally deranged, went in and killed somebody, doesn't mean that gun owners should be required to bear an unreasonable portion or all of the burden as proposed by the caller. The reality is that it's all of our responsibilities when it comes to good government.
Adam Winkler, what about this idea that our caller also had about making it illegal to carry loaded weapons? What do you make of that?
Well, the Supreme Court has not made clear whether the Second Amendment guarantees people a right to have guns in public, although I think it's inevitable that the Supreme Court will say that the Second Amendment does protect that right somewhat. The Second Amendment text says the right to keep and bear arms, and bear arms means to carry them. However, I do think that the Supreme Court's likely to uphold licensing requirements to ensure that people who have guns out on the street are properly trained and are trustworthy individuals. And in fact, we've always done that. Again, gun control is not a modern 20th century invention. The founding fathers banned people who they distrusted from having guns, and we were banning concealed carry of firearms in frontier towns of the Wild West as early as the 1870s. So these laws are part of our longstanding tradition of guns in America, and I do agree with the caller that we need to take back the debate from extremists on both sides of the aisle, recognize the right to bear arms, but also the legitimacy of good and effective gun control.
That's the voice of Adam Winkler. He's the author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Well, we're also joined by Sedgwick County Judge Phil Journey. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about gun control. We'll talk a little bit more about how the incident Friday in Connecticut is going to change the debate moving forward. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's reviews of the latest indie, foreign, and documentary films, you can find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. On tomorrow's show, we'll sit down with UMKC Chancellor Leo Morton, and we'll hear the next installment of our new series, 90 Mile View. This hour, we're talking about gun control. We're visiting with Adam Winkler, the author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. He's a UCLA constitutional law professor. And Sedgwick County Judge Phil Journey is also here, outspoken gun rights advocate. He's a former board member of the National Rifle Association. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Paul writes us this at uptodate@kcur.org. The Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. None of these guns, he writes, are part of a well-regulated militia. I think he's referring to what happened in Connecticut on Friday. Adam Winkler, you deal with this in your book, Gunfight. What does the Constitution say about all this, and what should we know?
Well, those words in the Constitution have bedeviled Americans for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if James Madison, the author of the Second Amendment, had just discovered this wonderful new thing, the comma, and wanted to put it in as many times as possible. And ever since then, it's been kind of hard to figure out how the different pieces of the Second Amendment fit together. What the Supreme Court has said is that the framers meant by a well-regulated militia was a militia, a fighting force of common, ordinary citizens, we the people who would be called out to serve in the event of some national emergency, and that we would bring our own guns and be prepared to fight in an instant, hence the famous Minutemen of the Revolutionary era. The militias themselves have sort of fell out of favor pretty quick in American history, replaced essentially by a standing army for national defense. But nonetheless, the Supreme Court has said that one of the key purposes of the Second Amendment was to give people the ability to defend not only their nation, but also themselves against criminal attack. And I think that is the best reading of the Second Amendment. However, I do want to emphasize, the Supreme Court also said, and it emphasized in the Teller case in 2008, there is plenty of room for good and effective gun control laws, and nothing in the Second Amendment calls into question our ability to try to make our public a more safe place, so long as we respect the right of individuals to have guns, at least in their own home, for self-defense.
Judge Philip Jurney, do you dispute any of what Adam just said?
Well, I'm hoping that the good professor would agree with me. One of the things that I worked on in the Kansas Senate was a bill that closed the information loophole so that the Kansas Bureau of Investigation informed the FBI every time someone was in a care and treatment case and had been found to be a danger to themselves or others. That state laws and the state transfer of that data is spotty at best across the country. And when we look at like the Virginia Tech shooter, he had significant mental health issues, just like the shooter from Friday did, and that they weren't properly addressed. And so if we can keep these people from owning the firearms, we don't have to necessarily destroy the right for law-abiding citizens.
Adam?
I think that's right. I was going to say that, one of the things I found going around the country talking about gunfight and talking to gun owners is that there is common ground on gun control issues. I think everyone, both gun owners and non-gun owners, agree that no one should be able to buy a gun with who's a criminal or someone who's mentally ill. And we have that prohibition in federal law. However, we don't have background checks on every single gun sale to require sellers ensure that they're not selling to someone who is a criminal or someone who's mentally ill. We need to improve that federal background check system. My view is we should require every single gun purchaser to go through a background check. And I also think that even if we don't do that, we need to improve our mental health data reporting because it is woefully incomplete. States are just simply not providing that information to the federal government. And people who are mentally ill can literally go right into a gun store and buy a gun because when they do a background check, it doesn't turn up that they are a prohibited purchaser.
Let's go to Sam from Kansas City, Missouri, who's talking about this issue we're talking about right now. Sam, go ahead.
Real quick, one thing I do want to mention is it seems to be repeated regularly that the shooter on Friday was mentally deranged, and equating that with his Asperger's. I do want to point out that Asperger's does not equal mental illness.
That's right.
Neurological disease.
Good point.
Also, in regards to my question, one, I have a question of, what about gun shows? Those do not require background checks. Those are not regulated in the same manner. And guns just go freely by traveling salesmen out the door.
Well, ma'am, I appreciate the point of view. That's not essentially true. Gun shows, if you're a federally licensed dealer, if you go to a gun show, you still have to comply with the federal law. And it's a violation of federal law if someone decides to set up their gun show business and sell firearms at gun shows to make money. The enforcement of current laws does occur, and there have been incidents I know in Kansas where individuals were selling stuff at gun shows, and there was one where there was prosecution that just started where the wife had the federal license and the husband was a convicted felon, but the husband was the one going to the gun shows, filling out the paperwork and selling the guns. And, they both got prosecuted, as well they should have been.
Mm-hmm.
So,
However, like we've been talking about, there seems to be far too many loopholes. My other question is, you were referencing the fact that, the Second Amendment gives us the right to bear arms, and that's a constitutional right that we are given. I would like to point out also that voting is a right that we are also given, but we do regulate that. there are certain people that are not allowed to vote, whether it be a convicted felon or, as we pointed out earlier, illegal immigrants.
Well, and that's regulated on a state level. It's not a federal law that prohibits people from being able to vote if they're a convicted felon. It's state laws. For example, in Minnesota, they wheel the voting machines into the prison. So, you know, and immediately upon release from custody, their rights are restored. In Kansas, that's not true. I don't know what the state of Missouri law is.
But then also you have to be a registered voter. And just during this past election, it was a big deal about all this voter fraud. I find it interesting that we can get up in arms about what is a virtually non-existent voter fraud, and we aren't getting up in arms about the fact that I can buy a gun legally and turn around and hand it to my neighbor, and we're not tracking that.
Once again,
we have to register personal property tax. You know exactly what kind of car I drive, and I have to keep that registered with the government. But guns can just go anywhere, and we don't track that.
Straw man purchases are a violation of federal law also. You know, there are those that believe that, for example, the random stop and frisk law in New York City has done a wonderful job of reducing violent crime in that city.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, how much of these rights do we give up for our security? I mean, we're back to building round houses.
Let's if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. In case you are, we're talking about gun control. I'm just wondering, Adam Winkler, in the wake of Friday's shootings in Connecticut, how do you see the national debate on gun control changing? Obviously, it has been ignited here. We are off and having a show today on this topic. Where is this thing going in your view here?
Well, we may be at a tipping point in the gun debate in America. It's hard to predict the future. Tea leaves are best left for making tea, I guess. But nonetheless, it does seem that there's more of a conversation already beginning to happen than we saw after Aurora. I can only tell you from my own personal experience, my day is just book solid with interviews, whereas after Aurora, I had a few interviews. To see 20 children just mercilessly slaughtered in a schoolhouse is enough to change anyone's attitude. I also think that the political environment in Washington is changing. I think that President Obama no longer needs to worry about reelection, so he's not going to be as fearful of offending swing state voters who love their guns. And I think the NRA did pretty poorly in the November election, when a lot of its endorsed candidates did not fare well. As a result, I think that there may be a different political calculus in Washington when it comes to taking on the NRA. I do think that if anything's going to pass in terms of gun control, it has to pass now. I think that President Obama, if he wants to get something through, shouldn't start a commission that waits 6 months. He should propose something by the end of this week. Push Congress to act now while people are still angry and upset about this incident, because our history shows that we often forget about these incidents after a few months and we return to normalcy, and the ground is ceded to, unfortunately, the extremists on both sides of the aisle.
Phil Journey, where's this debate going in from your standpoint?
Well, I think that there's a reason why these frivolous proposals such as the semi-automatic firearms ban go away after a while, because people calm down and they think about the realities of it, and they realize that a semi-automatic firearms ban isn't going to change anything. That if we are going to deal with this issue and prevent future tragedies like the schools, then other answers are out there. But those answers cost money. And whether there's political will to raise that money and spend that money is yet to be seen. I think it's pretty clear that when you look at the 1994 Republican Revolution, that the firearms issue and the things that the Clinton administration did were at the center of that sea change.
Mm-hmm.
And if it happens quickly, you'll see that sea change again.
Well, what kind
in the
of
next
changes,
cycle.
What kind of changes, Phil, do you think the NRA would accept in the wake of this
thing,
if anything?
I'm not their spokesperson. You're going to have to ask Wayne LaPierre that question.
But you've been associated with them for a long time.
I know many of the people and have had the privilege of serving on that board for a term. But I'm hesitant to try to answer that question, because I'm just not in the position to speak for the organization or for anyone other than
myself.
Well,
let me ask you this.
I mean, I'm here trying to figure out what we can do to do real positive changes in our lives and in our local governments.
Given what you know about the NRA, Phil, do you think that organization will come to the table with the president, with members of Congress, and have a conversation about where we go now?
I'd be amazed if that happened.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that say?
Well, that says that they're not going to negotiate with themselves. That says that they realize that if they give ground, it's not going to change the fact, and they'll just end up giving more ground the next time one of these guys goes off the deep end. And if they're not going to fix it, then why dispense your political capital or your capital in your organization? I mean, there's just no point in it.
Hmm. A listener writes this, I have a relative who was suffering from severe mental health issues. I am fearful that my relative may attack our family during the holidays. He owns guns. How he got them, who knows? He also sees a therapist twice a week or more. We live in fear that we may be the next headline in the local paper.
And what that person should do is contact their local law enforcement, let them do an assessment of the situation. If this person is a danger to themselves or others, they can be set up for a care and treatment hearing. They can be taken into custody and placed under observation, and they can have a hearing. It all happens very quickly, usually within 72 hours. And if those concerns are valid, then action should be taken.
Chris writes this, I'm an NRA member as well as a concealed carry permit holder. However, I would concur that there is no sporting need for military-type assault weapons to be available to the general public. A deer rifle or shotgun is a quite lethal weapon for home protection, and hiding behind the Second Amendment to refuse limitations of any type or variety is unreasonable. Nick writes this on Twitter, KCUR's Twitter account, background checks will not stop dangerous people having access to guns. Friday's shooter simply took guns belonging to his mother. Let's go to Doug here from Kansas City, Missouri. Doug, welcome to Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. God bless you for your show. So far...
We're wrestling an octopus today, Doug.
You are. Point number one is, in this entire discussion, the judge has only come up with one concrete answer to why any private citizen should be able to have one of these guns, and that was one, quote, because they're fun to shoot. Well, your fun needs to come with a cost, and you need to take responsibility for it. And I would propose that should these guns not be banned, that there's a tax on it to fund that data loophole that you were talking about so that state agencies and the FBI all tie in together to prevent these kinds of tragedies from happening in the future.
In fact, there are taxes on firearms and ammunition at this time.
Well, they need to be higher then, because we need to pay for this. And second of all, you say you're not a spokesman for the NRA, but I sure wish you were, because everybody who's challenged you on this show, you've taken a very condescending tone towards. And
well, that's not intentional.
I really hope you are their spokesman someday soon, because you do far more
to advance
the cause of banning these weapons than you think you are.
Doug, I appreciate that, but I appreciate Phil Journey making the trip up from Wichita to be with us today. Getting a gun rights advocate to speak on a program like this is tough stuff. You know, Phil, go back to Doug's initial point, which is this idea of what is the logic for being able to own something akin to an assault weapon in this country. Why? You know, people still wonder, why should that be permissible?
Well, the reality is that the design of these firearms is over 100 years old. They only shoot one cartridge with each pull of the trigger. They're not machine guns, which are heavily regulated by the federal government. The reality is that this is an issue that is couched around the appearance of the firearm and what it looks like. There's no difference in the function between an AR-15 and a Ruger Mini 14, other than one is black plastic and the other one is walnut. The reality is that these firearms are just like any other firearm. They're semi-automatic. You know, people are saying handguns are fine, but they're semi-automatic too.
You know, Tom Diaz, Phil, a senior policy analyst at the Violence Policy Center, said this the other day, that these rifles we're talking about that Adam Lanza used, the Bushmaster 22, also known as the AR-15, are increasingly being used in the killings of police officers whose vests often provide little protection against firearms like this.
I would be amazed to see those statistics. I mean, these guns are, you know, 3.5, 3 feet long, and you can't hide them under your trench coat very well. I just don't think that's true.
This is from the New York Times yesterday.
Reality is, it's handguns every time.
Enthusiasts praise the AR-15 rifle as lightweight, durable, accurate, and compared with other long guns, gentle in its kick. They describe the rifle as a gadget geek's dream, the Barbie doll of firearms, as one gun dealer described it, because of an array of accessories that allow it to be easily customized.
What about that?
Well, I'm just.
I mean, you know, it just the firearm shoots an intermediate powered cartridge. It doesn't kick very much. That's true. The reality is that there are much larger cartridges that are much longer range. That, you know, if this assault weapons ban on semi-automatic, why isn't a bolt action rifle a sniper rifle? Why isn't a handgun a Saturday night special? Mm-hmm. And we just march down this road, doing these feel-good legislation, which don't do anything to prevent the kinds of tragedy that we've been experiencing.
Adam Winkler, weigh in here, would you please?
We've had a lot going on, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, one thing I do want to say is that, you know, we need to have this conversation in as calm and a straightforward a way and a rational way as possible. I do think we need gun control advocates need to be at the table. Gun rights advocates need to be at the table. One of the problems with past gun control laws is that sometimes gun control laws get adopted without the input of the gun rights people, and as a result, they're drafted by people who don't know as much about guns as they should, and the laws that are drafted are not nearly as effective because they're not written by people who really are familiar with firearms. AR-15s are commonly used for sporting purposes in the sense of people like to go shoot them recreationally, but they don't have much of a self-defense rationale behind them. I don't think reducing access to them is going to make a serious dent in our crime rate, but I do think that we should be focused on what we can do to reduce the daily death toll from guns. Like I say, it's about 80 people a day, and if we can get that number even down a little bit, then that's many more families that are kissing their loved ones goodnight.
Adam, interesting question here from Jennifer. Legally, what happens to firearms after the owner dies? Is there any kind of background check on those who would inherit a gun or on a spouse who would now just own the gun?
It depends on the state in which you're in. In California, the state I'm in, then that gun cannot be transferred without a background check. But in most states, there is no background check for that kind of transfer. It's only a transfer that is undertaken by a federally licensed dealer. Do we have background checks undertaken? One of the earlier callers asked about the gun show loophole. I agree that there is no such thing as a gun show loophole. Gun shows operate under the exact same principles as everywhere else that there are guns sold. But too many people can go to gun shows and sell their guns without doing a background check. We need to stop that.
We're going to have to leave our conversation there. I'm sorry to Chris, David, Rick, Pat, Terry. We couldn't get to all your phone calls today. Phil Journey, thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure.
To have you. Adam Winkler, thanks to you as well. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Adam Winkler is a UCLA law professor and author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Phil Journey is a Sedgwick County judge. Today's conversation continues at kcur.org and on KCUR's Facebook page. Tomorrow on the program, we'll sit down with UMKC Chancellor Leo Morton, also the latest installment of our new series, 90 Mile View. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.